And the Afterglow is made possible in part by the generosity of Superior Energy in Vernon. Superior service you deserve. Serving the residential and commercial propane needs of Connecticut and Southern Massachusetts since 1939. Now is the perfect time to learn about the efficiency and cost-saving benefits of being powered by propane. With 24/7 support and state-of-the-art scheduling technology to simplify your busy life, just sit back and leave all your heating, cooking, and energy needs to the experts at Superior Energy. Your energy bill and the environment will thank you. Call 800-242-0427 or visit propanect.com.
Welcome to Time in the Afterglow. Hi, I'm Father John. Time to chill out, relax, and think pleasant thoughts to set to rest the anxiety and stress and heat of the day. And as day meets night, the sky is getting set to glow with the presence of God's picture-perfect masterpiece, just to remind us of the real beauty of life. We sit in the afterglow, painted with music and messages that help order life and help us appreciate the gifts that we have rather than cry over spilled milk. What? Well, what would you rather do? Envy your neighbor because they have a bigger house than you have? Or would you not rather gather up all of your gifts, your talents, and see opportunity where it is and take advantage of it to get ahead? The challenges that we face pale in comparison to the power that you have to make life better. This is a brief time set aside just for you, and you need do nothing but relax, listen, and enjoy what's ahead to help you improve upon life. It's your time in the afterglow. So this is where and how music helps us relax and enjoy the finer gifts of life. In the afterglow is where we are, in the middle of summer, where the weather has certainly been warm, but it's better than the alternative, right? It could be freezing cold with over a foot of snow on the ground, but if you really want to stay cool this summer, consider this. On this day, back in 1983, at the then USSR's Voltok station in Antarctica, the coldest recorded temperature happened. That temperature? A downright frosty 128.6 degrees below zero Fahrenheit.
So? I set my air conditioner at that temperature.
Then you might want to get that fixed. That's much too cold. But still, if you want to stay cool during these muggy, warm summer nights, think of the 128.6 degrees below zero temperatures in Antarctica occurring on this day 38 years ago. And you know, one of the joys that I get out of life is the ability to spend time with you in the afterglow each evening. It's my opportunity to share with you some of the most valuable information that you'll hear in the course of the day. When you call your friends, I don't want you to rehash just the weather and the same old topics of conversation. I'd like you to bring in valuable news of great importance. So when you call a friend tonight, you'll have something significant to say. Hi, Marie. Listen, do you know for whom the bell tolls? You know, for whom the bell tolls. It's a novel. Ever read it? Know who wrote it? She's got that rare habit of skipping out when she has no answer. Anyway, the author of For Whom the Bell Tolls is, of course, Ernest Hemingway, the legendary American author and journalist whose 122nd birth anniversary is today. Born in 1899, his distinctive writing style, characterized by economy and understatement, influenced 20th century fiction as did his life of adventure and his public image. Many of his works are classics of American literature. Among his best works are The Sun Also Rises, A Farewell to Arms, For Whom the Bell Tolls, and The Old Man and the Sea. He was awarded the Nobel Prize back in 1954 and wrote little thereafter. In his own words, his own voice, he spoke about writing in his acceptance speech.
Writing at its best is a lonely life. Organizations for writers palliate the writer's loneliness, but I doubt if they improve his writing. He grows in public stature as he sheds his loneliness, and often his work deteriorates. For he does his work alone, and if he is a good enough writer, he must face eternity, or the lack of it, each day. It is because we have had such great writers in the past that a writer is driven far out past where he can go, out to where no one can help him. I have spoken too long for a writer. A writer should write what he has to say and not speak it. Again, I thank you.
Early in 1918, during World War I, at only 18 years of age, Ernest Hemingway responded to a Red Cross recruitment effort and signed on to be an ambulance driver in Italy. By June, he was stationed at the Italian front, and on his first day in Milan, he was sent to the scene of a munitions factory explosion where rescuers retrieved the shredded remains of female workers. He described the incident. I remember that after we searched quite thoroughly for the complete dead, we collected fragments. A few days before his 19th birthday, he was seriously wounded by mortar fire. Despite his wounds, Hemingway carried an Italian soldier to safety, for which he received the Italian Silver Medal of Bravery. Still only 18, Hemingway said of the incident, "When you go to war as a boy, you have a great illusion of immortality. Other people get killed, not you. Then, when you are badly wounded the first time, you lose that illusion and you know it can happen to you." Hemingway spent 6 months in the hospital, where he met and fell in love with a Red Cross nurse 7 years his senior. They planned to marry, but she became engaged to an Italian officer instead. An incident that provided material for the short and bitter work A Very Short Story. Hemingway said, "Happiness in intelligent people is the rarest thing I know." Ernest Hemingway took his own life, shooting himself in 1961. Here in the Afterglow, we remember the 122nd birth anniversary of Ernest Hemingway.
Thank you.
Well, it's WJMJ Radio, Catholic Radio, where faith meets life, and you're in the Afterglow. I'm Father John. That was Old Man and the Sea. And in the Afterglow is where we take some time to reflect on where we're going and how we're going to get there. We're time travelers, actually, traveling through time with dreams, goals, and prayers for life's blessings. Time now to make our way toward the intersection of where faith meets life. You are given many opportunities to choose between being kind and being right. You have chances to point out to someone their mistakes, things they could or should have done differently, ways they can improve. You have chances to point out to someone their mistakes privately, as well as in front of others. What all these opportunities amount to is our chances to make someone else feel bad, and yourself feel bad in the process. Now, without getting too psychoanalytical about it, the reason we are tempted to put others down, correct them, or show them how we're right and they're wrong is that our ego mistakenly believes that if we point out how someone else is wrong, we must be right, and therefore we will feel better. In actuality, however, if you pay attention to the way you feel after you put someone down, you'll notice that you feel worse than before the put-down. Your heart, the compassionate part of you, knows that it's impossible to feel better at the expense of someone else. Luckily, the opposite is true. When your goal is to build people up, to make them feel better, to share in their joy, you reap the rewards of their positive feelings as well. So the next time you have the chance to correct someone, even if their facts are a little off, resist the temptation. Instead, ask yourself, quote, what do I really want of this interaction? Chances are, what you want is a peaceful interaction where all parties leave feeling good. Each time you resist being right and instead choose kindness, you'll notice a peaceful feeling within. Recently, Chris and her husband Bill were discussing a business idea that had turned out really well. Bill was talking about his idea, clearly taking credit for all the success. And Chris, in her usual loving manner, allowed Bill to have all the glory. Later that day, Bill remembered that the idea was actually Chris's idea and not his. Whoops. Bill then called her to apologize, and it became obvious to him that she cared more for his joy and happiness than she did her own need to take the credit. Chris said that she enjoys seeing Bill happy and that it didn't matter whose idea it really was. Bill later thought to himself, that's why she's such an easy person to love. Well, don't confuse this strategy with being a wimp, for not standing up for what you believe in. I'm not suggesting that it's not okay for you to be right, only that if you insist on being right, there is often a price to pay, your inner peace. In order to be a person filled with equanimity, you must choose kindness over being right, most of the time. The best place to start is with the next person you speak to, and that's where faith meets life.
She may be weary. Women do get weary wearing the same shabby dress. And when she's weary, try a little tenderness. Ooh, she may be waiting, just anticipating things she may never possess. While she's without them, try a little tenderness. It's not just sentimental. She has her grief and her care. But a word so soft and gentle makes it easier to bear. You won't regret it. Women don't forget it. Love is their whole happiness. And it's all so easy. Try a little tenderness. But a word soft and gentle makes it easier to bear. You won't regret it. Women don't forget it. Love is their whole happiness. And it's all so easy. Just try a little tenderness. You've gotta try. You've gotta hold her. You've got to squeeze her. You have to try. You've got to try and always please.
And that was a beautiful song by Michael Bublé called Try a Little Tenderness. Like it? I hope so. We're here in the Afterglow on WJMJ. Thank you for your company. As we make our way into the Afterglow, I'm Father John. And this is where the curtain comes down on the day. The sky is painted with the glow of tomorrow's promise, and night begins to move into position. Now, today marks the birth anniversary of a media pioneer. Israel Josaphat was born on this day in 1816 in Germany. Later in his life, he would convert to Christianity and, during the ceremony, change his name to Paul Julius Reuter. Reuter worked for a German publishing firm in the 1840s, publishing political pamphlets and news translations in Europe. In 1850, he started a carrier pigeon service called Reuter's News Agency to deliver news between Brussels, Belgium, and Aachen, Germany. He opened a telegraph office in 1851 in London and persuaded several publishers to subscribe to a service by which he would transmit important news over the wire virtually as it was happening. Now, the expansion of telegraph cables under the English Channel helped him grow his territory, and his news agency grew to be indispensable across Europe and around the world. It's grown from a carrier pigeon service to one of the biggest news outlets in the world to this day. Reuter passed away on February 25, 1899, and tonight in the Afterglow, we remember news pioneer Thomas Reuter. And on the more bizarre sides of technological history, today is the anniversary of the first reported robot homicide. What? Well, that's right. The first ever reported killing of a human by a robot occurred on this day in 1984 in the town of Jackson, Michigan. A robot turned and caught a 34-year-old worker between it and a safety bar, crushing him. He died of injuries a few days later. According to the National Institute for Occupational Safety and Health, OSHA, it was the first documented case of a robot-related fatality in the U.S. Could this mean the machines are taking over? Well, doubtful. However, it goes to show that we need to be careful around technology for more than one reason. That was the theme from 2001, A Space Odyssey, celebrating with more of the music you won't hear anywhere else. Only on WJMJ and here as we spend some quality time in the afterglow to recharge, regroup, and renew some of that great vitality of life. What happens, tell me, when you get burnt out? Well, you need to get renewed, right? If we could laugh more, be more lighthearted, develop a greater sense of humor, not take ourselves so seriously, we'd be healthier. Believe it. Well, now it's story time in the afterglow. Like any good mother, when Karen found out that another baby was on the way, she did what she could to help her 3-year-old son, Michael, prepare for a new sibling. Well, the new baby was going to be a girl. And day after day, night after night, Michael sang to his sister in mommy's tummy. He was building a bond of love with his little sister before he even met her. The pregnancy progressed normally for Karen, but serious complications arose during delivery, and Karen found herself in hours of labor. Finally, after a long struggle, Michael's little sister was born. She was in very serious condition. The days inched by, the little girl got worse. The pediatrician had to tell the parents there was very little hope. Michael, however, kept begging his parents to let him see his sister. "I want to sing to her," he kept saying. Week 2 in intensive care looked as if a funeral would come before the week was over. Michael kept nagging about singing to his sister. The kids are never allowed in intensive care. Karen decided to take Michael whether they liked it or not. If he didn't see his sister right then, he may never see her alive. She dressed him in an oversized scrub suit and marched him into ICU. He looked like a walking laundry basket. The head nurse recognized him as a child and bellowed, "Get that kid out of here now! No children are allowed!" The mother rose up strong in Karen, and the usually mild-mannered lady glared steel-eyed right into the head nurse's eyes, her lips a firm line. "He is not leaving until he sings to his sister." Then Karen towed Michael to his sister's bedside. He gazed at the tiny infant losing the battle to live. After a moment, he began tossing. In the pure-hearted voice of a 3-year-old, Michael sang, "You are my sunshine, my only sunshine. You make me happy when skies are gray." Instantly, the baby girl seemed to respond. The pulse rate began to calm down and became steady. "Keep on singing, Michael," encouraged Karen with tears in her eyes. "You never know, dear, how much I love you. please don't take my sunshine away. As Michael sang to his sister, the baby's ragged, strained breathing became as smooth as a kitten's purr. Keep on singing, sweetheart. The other night, dear, as I lay sleeping, I dreamed I held you in my arms. Michael's little sister began to relax as rest, healing rest, seemed to sweep over her. Keep singing, Michael. Tears had now conquered the face of the bossy head nurse. Karen glowed. You are my sunshine, my only sunshine. Please don't take my sunshine away. The next day, the very next day, the little girl was well enough to go home. The miracle of love. Something to think about.
How many sorrows do you try to hide in a world of illusion that's covering your mind? I'll show you something good. Oh, I'll show you something good. When you open your mind, you'll discover the sign that there's something you're longing to find.
A miracle of love will take away your
your fears. Tender is the one that wipes away your tears. There must be a bitter breeze to make you sting so viciously. They say the greatest coward can hurt the most ferociously. I'll show you something good. Oh, I'll show you something good.
that was the Eurythmics with Miracle of Love. Here in the Afterglow, where you will experience hope, love, trust, and faith in ways that you may never have thought possible. As we end another busy, eventful day crammed with more to do than you and I really had time to do, so to see it wrap up with some good music, interesting reflections, and prayer, why, it's a good way to celebrate what has been today and look forward to better things to come even tomorrow. So we close the hectic part of our day and we welcome what we hope is a peaceful, restful evening. You know, we are all pieces of a cosmic puzzle. When we are closed to the ideas and the suggestions of others, we might just be turning away the missing piece to complete our latest life puzzle. Now turn on the light, you'll see better. Think about God's joy. What can cloud it? What can quench it? Is God ever in a bad mood because the weather is too hot? Does God get ruffled over long lines or traffic jams? Does God ever refuse to rotate the earth because his feelings are hurt? No. His is a joy which consequences cannot quench. His is a peace which circumstances cannot steal. Now coming up is night prayer. But first, we let God's word talk back to us in today's word. Today is Wednesday of the 16th week in ordinary time. A sower went out to sow. One of the great religious mysteries is why different people respond to spiritual truth in different ways. One factor may be a person's spiritual and relational background, and whether there has been nurture and preparation during childhood. Both positive and negative experiences in one's past will influence one's capacity and willingness to receive religious truth. Ultimately, however, there is the matter of choice. No one can determine the subjective factors at work in another person's responses, and we must trust such matters to God. But each person has some degree of responsibility for whether they will receive or reject spiritual truth. This cannot be forced, but will always be a matter of free will under the mysterious influence of the Holy Spirit. Jesus was fond of teaching in parables. In fact, some New Testament scholars claim that he invented the parable as a teaching tool. A parable is a simple story drawn from everyday life that teaches some grand principle. As such, a parable is similar to a fable, but fables often include animals as the chief actors in the story. Parables are object lessons drawn from ordinary life. What could be more familiar to the audience of Jesus than a farmer who broadcast his seed on uneven soil? Some seed was devoured by the birds, some scorched by the sun, some choked out by the weeds, and even the seed that did grow yielded different harvests. Some soil yielded 100 or 60 or 30-fold increase in the grain sown. Jesus told this story to warn his audience that not everybody who heard the word of God responded in faith. And even those who did reaped different harvests of faith in their lives. That warning still stands in our day. Not everyone who hears the gospel believes. But we can find other meanings in this story in addition to the obvious meaning that Jesus had in mind. For example, the recognition that different soil produces different harvest is a reminder that most people do the best they can with what they've got. A person who grows up in a ghetto may fall short of becoming a senior partner in a law firm, but he deserves as much credit, perhaps more credit, than the person born with a silver spoon in his mouth. All Jesus asked of his audience was to do the best they could with what they've got.
Well, inch by inch, row by row, I'm gonna make this garden grow. All it takes is a rake and a hoe and a piece of fertile ground. And inch by inch, row by row, someone blessed these seeds I sow. Someone warmed them from below till the rains come.